Hello and welcome. Oh, that's the wrong opening. I'm doing the opening for the PW Insider.
Oh, no, it's good. Keep it. Let's just go for that.
No. It's the wrong rhythm. I need to say, hello and welcome. Now I can't do an opening.
Fine.
Hello and welcome once again there to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internet is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Have we started again?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't paying attention. I'm doing okay. Before we get too far down the road, let's take care of some old news, old business, because I had a couple of questions from last podcast that I didn't answer, and I'm going to right away. The first one I'd mentioned, I was reading a book on Robin Williams. I got it right here. It's called Robin by Dave Itzkoff. Itzkoff was published, dun, 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 2018. And I picked mine up at Half Price Books. And it kind of is an interesting companion to the HBO Max documentary that I saw come inside my mind, because it gets a little more nitty gritty, a lot of interviews from Robin, friends like around him, and things like that. So if you're interested, you got that. Second off, I did a ingredient by ingredient comparison of Diet Mountain Dew and Mountain Dew Zero Sugar. And as far as I can tell, there's one chemical that's different. Like, I see sodium benzoate, which says it's a preservative, and I see sodium citrate in the zero. But other than that, everything is the same. Natural flavoring, carbonated water, the citrix. I will swear, though, that Diet Mountain Dew Zero has a very different taste than Diet Mountain Dew. And it has to do with the aftertaste. It took me a long time to get used to drinking Diet Pop, because when I found out I was diabetic all them years ago, I just switched. I stopped drinking sugared soda, which also probably helped me lose a lot of weight. But then I also just got used to the taste of diet soda, because that was all I could drink. And then when I found out I got rheumatoid arthritis, I cut out colas or anything with the caramel coloring. Allegedly, caramel coloring is bad for the joints, which is how I settled on Diet Mountain Dew as my caffeine fix of choice. Again, when I drink it, yeah, it's got a little zing to it, which, you know, it's like drinking beer or drinking coffee. You either like it or you don't. So that's the only two old pieces I have of stuff I've got on my agenda. How about you, Corey? You got anything old you want to cover up from past shows that we cover up that we haven't? We've just like dangling and just kind of never answered.
Nothing like that, but I do have a new Comics Are Dying report.
Oh, well, that's always amusing.
The annual joint sales report from ICV2, which is Internal Correspondence Volume 2, which is kind of made up from the leftover bits and pieces of Capital Comics Distribution, and Comic-Con, so it's Milton Greep and John Jackson Miller. They have their annual report. Total comics and graphic novel sales to consumers in the U.S. and Canada, this is across everything, were approximately $2.075 billion, a 62% increase over sales in 2000, a 70% increase from sales in 2019. Publishers made more selling comics content than in any year in the history of the business, even when adjusted for inflation. The biggest year in the modern era, 1993, saw sales of around $1.6 billion in 2021 sales. And the pricier product mix puts 2021 ahead of what the colossal circulations of the early 50s brought in, also adjusted for inflation. While graphic novels lead the way, comic sales also exhibited high growth in 2021. Graphic novels were up an astonishing 76%. Comics were up 53% versus 2020 and up 23% versus 2021. Now, here are the highlights. Comic shop sales were up 60% versus last year and 34% versus 2019. Book channel sales, including book fairs, were up 81%. Digital growth slowed from 2020. Newsstand, which is counted in the other category, continues to decline, but crowdfunding growth offsets that. The comic periodical format from the last pandemic year was, the number of releases declined, but sales were still up in all formats. The analysis now uses data based on sales tracked at point of sale by the Comic Hub system in over 100 stores. We've used that data to build a model of sales for the entire comic store channel using comparisons developed during periods where Comic Hub and Diamond reporting overlapped. I'm almost flabbergasted by that, but it does track with everything that we've been talking about for the past couple of years, where Marvel and DC and Image and Boom and Dynamite and all of these companies are moving out of comic shops, especially when we've got a boom in comic book related movies and TV series. The more they get into book fairs and bookstores and other channels, the higher the sales go. The Boys, huge on Amazon right now.
And didn't Dynamite, you say last
yep.
episode that the books are sold out?
They are sold out and they can't get reprints until next year.
How's Walking Dead doing? Is it still selling harsh?
Walking Dead has slowed. Invincible is very dependent on when a new season releases, because when the first season released, shot up a lot, but it has trended down since then, I imagine, when the next season comes out. But you've also got Umbrella Academy, which is number one on Netflix right now. Usagi Yojimbo, the second season's about to be released. Sales on that are way up.
You know what else I find interesting, though?
What's that?
I'm on Facebook, I keep getting tons of ads for Z2 Comics. And Z2 Comics basically takes rock stars and makes graphic novels for them. Hailstorm. And it's actual ads with the members from the band holding the graphic novel. Weird Al has one that I missed out on the signed version.
It's Snyder's, still being drawn, by the way, because Bob Fingerman has been posting pages as he gets them done. It looks really good.
Yeah. And again, if you just want the standard one, it's $29. And I would have gone $300 for the one signed by Weird Al, but I was too late on that. D. Snyder's got one. There's the Hellstorm one. Pantera. Tori Amos. Guar. It's just, and that's just page one. There's like six more pages of these things. And that's a format that people are, there's one for Pantera. That's what got me going right away. And they're usually, you can get the basic one or the deluxe one that comes with a CD or an LP, or sometimes all the way up to the super deluxe signed limited version, which is just amazing. So yeah, there's money being made. People are paying attention, and you know, maybe I don't want to, the comic books themselves aren't selling tons of them, but ultimately you want to get to that graphic novel because that's where you're going to make the bucks. And
but remember what they said here, that even regular comic sales are up. Let me go and get that number again. Regular comic sales are up. Where is it here? God, this is a long article, too. Comics were up 53% versus 2020 and up 23% versus 2019. In 2021, sales were up 53% from the year before. And we keep hearing all of these all of these older fans. No, comics are dying. Nobody's buying this new stuff. They don't want to buy. No, diversifying is how you get more readers. And they're hooking the kids. Which is what we've been saying for 40 years. When comics moved into comic shops, that was one of the reasons why Marvel started Star Comics. It was why we got to have comics for kids. We got to get kids hooked on comics. Kids are hooked on comics now. I don't care if it's manga. They don't see a difference between manga and those young adult novel, graphic novels, or Squirrel Girl, or Moon Girl, or any of it. To them, it's just
the ones I was blabbing about on our review. You know, I read one of them, and I find them refreshing. But they're not aimed at me. You know, I keep seeing them show up at Target. I see them as I wander through a Walmart. You know, when I go to the library, I watch the kids just read them in a flurry. You know, and then when they finally get up and leave, I can take them and check them out.
And the thing is, Walmart and Kmart, Walmart and Target are not going to stock those things if they don't sell. If you don't sell, they bargain it out and it's gone.
Well, I imagine with those, they probably return them. They're probably on a rack because I've never seen them. Well, no, that's not true. Occasionally, you do see them discounted because when I used to buy for the charity booth for the MCBF, I used to always look for the clearance bin and you'd find just kids' books there. But I don't think they waste time with that. I think what they do is they gather it all up and then they sell it off to whoever bids on it, Goodwill or Salvation Army or whatever. But so finding them in the stores,
they're not going to restock them. They're not going to get the next batch.
There's something new.
Match didn't sell.
I did see another Teen Titan book there. So, you know, they are bringing them in.
Back in the 80s, I remember talking with authors who talked about it was O'Hare Airport was the perfect example of what they did. Book publishers would pay attention to O'Hare Airport. O'Hare Airport was the number one seller of paperback books. And the reason was they had the book stands all over the airport. And they had a guy who had a cart. And he would start the day and he would make sure that the first one he went to was fully stocked. And you know, all of them are fully stocked when the day starts. So around 4 hours after the airport's open, he would go around with his cart. And if book had sold out, it'd get restocked. If they'd sold two or three, get restocked. If a book hadn't sold any copies in the first 4 hours, it was pulled and something else was put in its place. And he would just do that round of the airport the rest of the day. You had 4 hours to sell. And if you didn't sell within 4 hours, you were done. You got pulled and you were not stocked. And in a lot of ways, Walmart, Target, they are the same way. If it's not selling, they're going to dump it. And they're going to dump it fast.
I think Harlan Ellison was the one who brought that up because he said, you know how long it takes? How long it might grab? Somebody was complaining and they never find the books anywhere. It's 3 hours. That's all you got there. And if it doesn't sell there, they're not going to put my books anywhere else. And that's Harlan Ellison.
Yeah. Now, we went to a sale these are people who used to own a shop. And they were keeping their cards close to the vest when I talked to them. Because the last sale that they had, they're called Most Wanted Comics now. And what it is, they have a warehouse. And they set up at conventions. And then they have this dance studio that they set up in. And we'll sell for a weekend. And last year, their last sale, they said, we're closing out. We're blowing everything out. Everything in the warehouse is going to be gone. We're getting out of it. Because I went and I looked back on it. And it's, yep, this is our last sale. If it doesn't sell now, we're going to take it to a convention or we're going to dump it on, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We're getting out. But they announced that they were having a sale this weekend, last weekend.
The thing that was different with this one is it used to be it was one vendor. That was probably the first show I went to where I dropped like $300 on dollar books. The second show or third, it was, I think, his brother. So there were actually two separate guys. This time there were three. They brought somebody else, and I was able to find things from all three. But you were talking. I just wanted to mention how it's changed. You've actually got now three separate dealers in there. I didn't actually talk to them because I had like an hour and a half to run through everything and go to work. But what did they say when they talked with you?
I asked. I said, "You guys said that you were shutting down last year and you'd sold everything off." And they kind of, we got this collection and et cetera, et cetera. And when I was going through, I went through all the – first, I went through the packs, which were stupidly overpriced.
Agreed.
They would have a pack of, like a mini series or something, and it'd be $20. But you go over into the dollar books and, oh, look, I could pick up all four of these for a dollar each. Well, I'm not going to buy the $20 pack, but I could get all four issues for a dollar. And all the dollar books were bagged, boarded, sorted, etc. So to me, it looked like they bought a store's inventory on the left-hand side and the middle. Then on the right-hand side were back issues that were priced. And I didn't bother to go through those. Because
I went through them, but I didn't see anything.
I'm not there for, to fill in a collection or anything. I'm there for cheap reads.
Yeah, and it used to be the first ones that I went to is they had these that were priced were like at half price. And at that, I would look through, and even if I had it, I might end up buying it. Same thing with the packs. The one thing I didn't ask on, they had one box on the floor that were magazines that weren't marked. And I realized I looked through them and didn't see anything I had to have. But then as I was leaving and on my way to work, I was like, oh, I should have asked them if those were dollar books. Because it was just like they dropped it on the floor and forgot about it. They had their wall books, which I think were as priced. I didn't see anything there to get me excited. I did buy quite a few dollar books. And I actually hit a box, and we'll get at this when we start talking about what I bought, that were like older beat up silver and Bronze Age books.
Yes.
And I kind of wiped that out, at least when I was there. They allegedly restocked while on Saturday. I looked through all the toys. Somebody did come through and bought quite a few of their vintage toys. They were buying them as I left. In the middle of the room were a bunch of dollar unbagged books, mostly blah 80s, 90s, maybe beyond. I kind of went
they
through those.
They weren't sorted. They weren't in any order at all. I went through those, but I didn't exactly, I wasn't digging. It was more flipping through really fast and looking for specific things.
Yeah, same thing. I flipped through everything much, much faster than I normally do, because usually I'll catch something like, oops, that's interesting. So that was the main guys. Then off to the right against the wall, I think, was the brother. Now, his has changed a bit because he used to be just all dollar books, and then he had a few boxes of things that were marked higher. Now everything, if it was not marked, it was a dollar, and then everything else was marked, and then he might do a deal with you, which changed my pulling from him, because I basically just was looking, like you said, I was looking for dollar things. Only thing I didn't buy were the zombie tramps that I was complaining about a few episodes ago, because he had tons of them for a buck, but it's like, there's a personal sensor on eBay that's going through reporting everybody's books but his own. And I'm like, I don't need that type of headache for, even if it is for a buck. The series is fun, but, I did buy some things from him. Did you see anything from him?
I did not, because when I went over to his table, I kind of looked through, and a lot of it was either premium stuff or stuff I wasn't interested in. I mostly went through the stuff on the left-hand side and the stuff in the middle. And again, like you, my time was limited. I went before I went to the group home. So I had my alarm on my watch set so that at 5:30 it would go off and I was, okay, I need to pay.
Yeah,
and
same thing.
I filled up a long box.
I did maybe a third of a short box. So I was really off my feet.
And I would say half of those are dollar books, DC dollar books.
The third guy, I should remember him. I think he used to run a store in Fargo, and he just had his priced. He was cutting deals. He gave me a really good deal. I only bought like four or five books from him. And again, I'll talk about them when we start talking. If you got anything specific you bought that you're like, oh, this was cool. So I bought something a little bit from everybody. I dropped maybe 100. And like I said, most of the stuff I have are the things I plan to read. Maybe 10, 15 things that are just things I'm going to flip. And I'm just going to kind of lean over here. And let's see, where the heck today. Like a Death Head 2 Gold. I picked up, I don't know if you remember, Wonder Woman, the original run, 291 to 293, where it was Judgment in Infinity, where essentially all the female DC superheroes got together to fight the bad guy. Wonder Woman, Wonder Girl, Black Canary, Supergirl, which is why I picked it up. There's Huntress, there's Raven, Starfire, Power Girl. A couple of one-shots, JLA Created Equal. Some odd and ends things, like a Witchblade photo cover. There's Ultraverse, All New Exiles versus X-Men for a buck. I'm like, even if I got it, I'm just going to grab. I talked about some of the cheapy books I picked up. Let's see, some Jimmy Olsen. From the one guy who I think from Fargo, I picked up a Young Romance 198 and a Partridge Family 8 because it had a great cover. I found some King Comic Phantoms, a couple Gold Key, four-star Spectacular DCs, World Finest Giants, some Lois Lanes. Captain Terrible presents the Terrible Five, Split.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a couple Archies. So I think I mentioned the Jimmy Olsen's. So just goofy things like that, you know, cheap, a few Silver Age, mostly Bronze Age. I think the only pack, oh, geez, that's too far away. The only thing I remember, I'm trying to get to the stuff I kept. Where are you? Oh, well, I know I picked up like a run. King Shark, because I wasn't able to get all those together. There's a Deathmate Red, Avengers Rough Cut, some the whatever. Yeah, just goofy things like that. Most of the stuff I picked up, I'm just going to read. How about yourself? What kind of things did you luck out across?
A whole bunch of Superman Family.
Oh, fine. I saw those. And I already have the run, so I don't have to worry about it. But yeah, for a buck, that's solid reading.
And those DC dollar comics, anything that was a DC dollar comic, Unexpected, House of Mystery, All Out War, all the DC dollar books that I saw in that line of dollar stuff, those were just boom. Do I have it? Don't know, but it's a dollar, and I know it's worth a lot more than that.
I know I've got a lot of those. World Finest is about the only one I'm missing runs on. You know, when they put together like Shazam and Green Arrow and all those guys. Yep.
I got, you know, The Adventure, World's Finest. I did pick up, they had a run of pre-crisis Wonder Woman. And for the most part, I don't much care for pre-crisis Wonder Woman. But I looked and said, you know, I know Roy Thomas wrote a run on this. So I picked up Roy Thomas's run on Wonder Woman. And here's the weird thing. For most of it, it was drawn by Gene Colan. So Roy Thomas and Gene Colan working on Wonder Woman. Now you go, oh, wow, that's a pretty good creative team. Back then, it was like, yeah, it's Wonder Woman. Nobody cares. There were some 90s series that I picked up that I did not pick up at the time. Scarlet is one of them, which was a DC vampire book.
Chase. I'm just going to interrupt those three Wonder Woman that I bought.
Yeah.
Paul Levitt's plot, Roy Thomas script, Gene Colan art. Yep. So I got three of them.
Chase, I picked that up. I picked up Hacker Files. You know, it was DC stuff. that they had the complete run of, and I'd never read, because at the time it was like, my budget's not going to allow me to pick up everything. Well, now at $1 each, I can pick up the entire run for $10. I'm good with that. They had some 70s Marvel reprints. They had some, they had a really nice batch of the Archie giant sizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I saw those.
Which were double normal size in the dollar bin, so I picked those up. And I just got, you know, a long box of comics. And what I did afterward, I put it in the car. I have not brought it in yet. You know why, Joe?
Well, because you'll probably read those at work.
Yep. When I'm at the group home and everybody goes to bed. I'm in a house now where everybody goes to bed around 8 to 8:30. And I usually get my cleaning that I'm supposed to do done. After, you know, I'm there for an hour. My buddy kind of is with me. And then he's exhausted because it's for him late in the day. I don't have to do meds. So I do what little cleaning I have to do. I have to clean up after supper. Like, what was it? I think, no, Tuesday night. Everybody was in bed by 7:45. So it's like, okay, I'm just going to grab 5 or 6 comics, bring them in. I also picked up the History of the DC Universe 1 and 2. Do I already have that? Yep. Am I going to buy it for $1 because it's Marv Wolfman and George Perez? Hell yeah. There was the New Adventures of the Spirit, which was put out by Kitchen Sink in the late 90s, which had stories by Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, I saw that whole run and I was like,
Then they had the run of the Darwin Cook Spirit, which I had not bought. And it was, well, $1 each. Got to get them. It's Darwin Cook. So just a lot of good, cheap reading. And it's why I like sales like that.
Yeah, that one guy had a run of Mr. Monster that I really, really thought I should just pick up the whole damn thing and go with it. But
they had a run of Ms. Tree in the Unsorted. I could have put together a run of Ms. Tree, but they're putting it out in trade paperbacks, and I've already got 4 of the, what is it? It's going to end up being either 6 or 8 trade paperbacks. Well, I've already got 4 of them.
I can, I give a, I know it's early, but I'm just kind of freaking a little bit, because as we're recording this on the 30th of June, on July 1st, Claremont Comics in Eclair is celebrating their 8th year, or I should say the current owner owning it for 8 years, and they're doing a dollar sale.
Ooh.
I know. And that was one of the places when we ventured over into Wisconsin, we were going to hit, but when we got to K&B Collectibles, because we ran into our old bud Brian Messick, that kind of finished our day there. And we never did make it to Claremont Comics. I wish I did. And again, I work on Friday. Otherwise, you know, I've been muting a lot because I've still got that dumbass cough from last week. Well, when we get to the real freaking gig, I'll tell you why I'm not blowing off Friday. Go to another dollar sale. But congratulations, Claremont Comics. I swear we're going to make it to you guys eventually.
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 One of these days.
As soon as Butch goes to an AEW show.
I still haven't heard back from him.
Oh, yeah. Tell him there's no job involved. That might get him.
Now, the other thing they had, and I didn't look too deep into it. They had a whole bunch of toys there.
Yeah.
So I saw the resident toy guy. What was their was it a good lineup of toys? Was it not a good lineup of toys? What were we looking at there?
It was some of the vintage toys were really cool. The coolest thing I really looked at was they had a 12-inch Indiana Jones figure, which would have dated probably around the 80s. I don't know if it was a Disney exclusive or one you could have bought up elsewhere. They did have a little tiny Mork from Ork where he flies in his egg. I kept thinking about that, and it's one of those, I should have bought it, but I didn't. But I'm not really connected in the toys the way I used to. I'm glad I'm not. Because as I follow along and just watch some of my friends collecting toys and stuff, there's not the outlets to get toys anymore. I mean, when I was collecting, and this would have been 80s throughout the 90s, I think I probably lost my smile, if I can use an old wrestling phrase, after I sold Hot Comics. You know, you could go to KB Toys, you could go to Children's Palace before it went away, Toys R Us, Walmart, Kmart, Target, Zare, Shopper City. No, that was gone. That was a 70s show. And not to mention all the different comic shops. And that was even, you know, that was before eBay was around. It was kind of a cornucopia. I told one guy, I think this, especially as the comics shops jumped up, that was kind of the golden age of action figures. You had things being turned into action figures that you'd never see today. Maybe not never, but, you know, the prices were fairly cheap, anywhere from $5 to maybe $20 for a high-end exclusive. Unless, of course, you had the pantyless Angela. Then you, you know, get a little bit more for that.
Hey, now.
Not to mention, you know, I mentioned the female figures. Unless you got a mix sent to a comic shop, finding the female figures was gold, because you could probably trade that or sell it to someone for 2 to 3 times what you paid for it, because boys don't play with women action figures. A conceit that still kind of goes around to this day, hence no Black Widow action figures, no Rey action figures in the Star Wars line, which wasn't really true. But the collectors kept buying them. The two famous ones I remember were, of course, the original Princess Leia, where they really did a bad job on the face sculpt. But there were hardly any to be found. And one day I walk into Children's Palace, or was it, maybe it was Toys R Us. They had a whole end cap of them. They just went and said, boys, send them all to me. Counselor Troy of the Playmates Star Trek line. That was the one at Children's Palace, because, you know, there was only one per case. Well, the Playmate guys who were, and gals that were collecting this line, wanted the whole run. And they couldn't find it. And then finally, I think Children's Palace just said, send them all. Does the Strode know? Ask the Strode. What do I call it? It's been so long since I've asked you the question. I don't know what we say.
Ask the Strode.
Do you know what helped kill the Star Trek Playmate line?
I do not.
They came out with this brilliant idea of having a limited figure of certain ones. The one I remember for sure was Thomas Riker, which, for you non-Star Trek fans, due to a transporter accident, Riker was split in two. The William Riker escaped, and we loved him. The Thomas Riker ended up beaming back to this planet, and 7 years later, they went to find him and discovered, oh, my God, I got a doppelganger. And unlike Star Trek normally does, they didn't kill him off. In order to celebrate Star Trek's whatever anniversary, they were only going to make 1,701 of these figures. And that put everybody's underwear in a knot, because you're collecting this entire run. Now they just basically made a bunch of figures you would never, ever find. They tried to backpedal by re-releasing the figure, but by then the damage was done. And to be truthful, they had done most of the main characters. They were doing kind of secondary and third and fourth and fifth characters, variations on everything. You know, then they did the original crew in a box set on the bridge, which was fine, but if you just wanted, say, an original uniform Spock, you couldn't get it. So that kind of turned everything off. If you watch the Toys Who Made Me, they even talk about that. So the other one I can think of, and we've talked about it, is the time that Brian and Dan scored nothing but Rogue figures from the Playmates line. And that's all they brought to one of the MCBA show. And dealers went ballistic. Oh my God, I got to get 20 of these. I got 30 of these. I already had mine. I got mine from Brian and Dan under the guise that I couldn't put them out till after the con. And Brian and Dan are like, no, we'll do it towards the end of the show. Right now, we just want to sell to consumers. And by half the day, they sold, I don't know how many of these things they had, 1,000? I really don't know. But they packed up and left. They sold out everything they had. They weren't, aren't you coming back? No. So I took half their table. The guy next to me took the other half. So the female figures were hot. And for the most part, really well done. Again, that Princess Leia sculpt, Ted notwithstanding.
We've heard a number of times how you got into comics.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing Spider-Man 178.
Yes.
But how did you get into collecting toys? Because I had toys, and I think the last toy line that I really got into as a kid was the Micronauts. And then after, you know, once I was in junior high and kind of got past the Micronauts, it was, well, I want to spend my money on Dungeons and Dragons and comics. But you stayed with toys and kind of moved into the collector realm, and you still have tons and tons of them.
So actually, no.
What is your secret origin on toys?
Well, I never stopped buying them. The earliest toys I remember buying with my own money were Hot Wheels because they were a buck. And I had a Kmart maybe half a mile away. I'd jump on the train tracks, walk down, and before you're like, oh my God, that's dangerous. Yeah, it was, but I was train savvy. You could hear the train whistle through the rails, you know, going over the joints. You'd hear bing, bing. You know, if you kept your eye open, you'd see the thing because it was just a mile or two stretch of straight track. You watch the signals. Hey, it turned green. There's a train behind you. Switch tracks. And a lot of times because it was on the top of a hill, you would hear them. I swear, in my neighborhood, you'd hear the train taking off from downtown St. Paul, and we were like 3-4 miles away before it went past our house. So, but yeah, I would just walk down to Kmart with anytime I got a buck, maybe a buck quarter because I'd pay tax. And I still have in a box somewhere probably most of those toys. I went through a phase where I tried to repaint everything, and I never learned about paint thinner or paint stripping, so you know, you're looking, okay, this could have been a $1,000 toy, but now it's a $50 dud or maybe less. To this day, I still buy Hot Wheels because they're cool. Plus, you know, like I just bought this one that was, oh, never mind. I want a sidebar. I went through my G.I. Joe phase, the 12-inch G.I. Joe phase. As I went into college, yeah, I stopped buying around. Yeah, in high school, but I ran into some friends and they had Hot Wheels and we started racing Hot Wheels. My buddy had a long hill that went down into a swamp. So we'd run quite possibly about maybe 10 yards of track and we'd race cars, or if it was rainy, we'd do a course inside. And so we're always out. We'd stop by Toys R Us and we'd pick out new cars. So we were always buying things. Then we got into Transformers. I remember when Transformers first came out, and it was the hottest toy out there. I was working Sears catalog, sold out instantly. Because I remember, can you order this? I said, all the Transformers are sold out. Type in the code for Optimus Prime out of the Sears catalog, and it would be like, nope, sold out. I remember once when a lady wanted to return a Megatron because she was like, and if she did, I'd have bought it. But she was like, I don't think this thing works. And I looked at it, and I called this kid, hey, come over here. Yeah, transform this for me. Okay, it's a robot. Okay, put it back. Or I'm sorry. And I told the lady, and I said, it's fine. We're just not smart enough to do it. Save the sale. So we started collecting Transformers high and low. We got everything in the original series, all the way from Laserbeak, the original Optimus. Actually, I think the Optimus Prime I got was the Pepsi Mail Away, which was just as good as the original since we couldn't get the original, all the way up to what the Fortress Maximus, which stood, I believe, about a foot tall, maybe 2 feet tall. My buddy ordered it through Sears catalog, the only place you could find it. I mention this because these made their way into my shop once we opened. I kept mine. I brought them to the shop. I think one guy traded his to one of the three guys who were buying these for a car. I remember when we were down in Texas and we went transformer shopping, much to my buddy's mom's amusement, and we bought transformers. And I think I got a Metroplex. And of course, we were sitting in the living room transforming the Metroplex and putting stickers on. And she looked at us like, I swear you guys are 6 years old. Heck, I remember I used to love the Sears catalog, because when the Sears catalog would come, I'd take a notebook and I'd go through that thing and I would say, OK, on page 564, number one, $6 million man figure. Number two, the Bigfoot. I didn't want the Bionic Woman. OK, there was something to that. Some days when I was bored, I'd take the Sears catalog and I'd go through and I'd make my own Avengers. I'd say, OK, this is the Avenger run for this year. Anybody who was in the Sears catalog, $6 Million Man, Big Jim, Atomic, Mike Powers, the Atomic Man. That was before the G.I. Joe shrunk down little. So, again, toys were always part of it. I got into college. We were still collecting Transformers. My buddy was down in Texas once, found a score of Transformers. Went into a warehouse. These guys like, we don't know what we're going to do with these things. He bought them all. You know, probably about $1,000 retail Transformers. And again, they were running like $5 to $10, maybe 20 for the bigger sets. So that was a lot of money. Plus, he had to figure out how to get him home. I think he threw him in his, bought a trailer and dragged him up. So we had tons of these things. As I remember in the mid-80s, as Pat Gruber and I were doing Comic-Cons. And if you go back to one of the Solo Joes when I actually interviewed Pat, he'll talk about it. The infamous Wisconsin Dells show. That's all I'm going to say. If you've never heard the story, go listen to those Solo Joes. They're up on the podcast free, and you can. It's a fun podcast because I get to talk to Pat. We talked about our origins for buying comics, how we got together, buying comics, bought Hot Comics, and you know, broke up, whatever. And of course, the infamous Wisconsin Dells Con. For me, it was a bad con because we really didn't sell much, considering what we spent and how we got there. Lord help my poor wife, then girlfriend at the time, sat in the middle. Maybe it was my wife. I don't remember, because it was, you know, she had to sit in the middle of a Ford Ranger with Classic Pat on one side, me in the other, and a stick shift. So, poor woman. No wonder she's a saint. At that show, I bought a ton of Marvel Super. Oh, what the hell were they called? Superhero Secret War figures. You know, the ones where they were kind of stoic figures and they had a secret decoding thing. Good for the time. I was vaguely aware of DC Superpowers, but that's what got me started buying toys like that. And again, I would go to KB Toys. My favorite was Children's Palace. I think they were on the short end of the toy spectrum because Toys R Us was kind of putting a hammer to them. But you could go up and down their aisles and you'd see tons of toys. You remember the Crusaders,
Corey? Oh, yeah.
I got their entire toy line from KB Toys. Not KB Toys. From Children's Palace. And again, Crusaders, one of the lost universes that Archie did.
Yeah.
Anytime I was more of a hero guy. I didn't really pick up villains unless they were really cool, like Dr. Doom. And I really enjoyed. I didn't open them, but I would always display them. And this was a time when Chris and I were just living in apartments before we got to our house. And I would basically pin them up on the wall. Trying to think of when we bought our house in 91. So this would have been pre-91 when we were going apartment to apartment. When I finally bought the store, that was sort of when it sort of ended my toys, because, and comics too, because people are like, oh, you must have a great comic collection. So not as much as you'd think, because when comics became a commodity, I was more interested in selling than I was collecting, which is why, although, well, Pat and I had a great run of Valiant Comics, and we brought it in, and that's when Valiant Comics were hot, 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 which is appropriate because we bought Hot Comics. And I brought in a lot of the toys. I would still buy toys. Mostly, you know, I'd get in a set and, okay, I'm taking this set for me. But I found it was more lucrative if I actually would promise guys, I will get you a complete run of Spawn toys, including the hot female figure, if you commit to buying sets for me. And I say this with some pride. We used to get 30, 40 boxes of Spawn toys in, and I'd have them all sold out. Yeah, granted, I'd end up with the lame figure sometimes. But, you know, we would hunt down for those exclusive. I know Brent Moore and I from Comic Archives were working, trying to get an exclusive toy with McFarlane. The thing was, is McFarlane would be, yeah, we'll do an exclusive toy. But if you recall Target's exclusive Spawn toys, lame. We wanted an Angela. We wanted a hot figure that would drive people insane. But again, we talked about it. We never got anywhere with it. That was probably the end of my toy run. And as things went on, and I, especially after I sold the shop, I think I had to make a decision. Do I want to keep collecting the toys? Because they take up a lot of space. Or do I just want to maybe throttle back? Because most of the time, and Corey will remember this too, and I think I did this at the big shop. If I bought a toy, I opened it right away because I wanted to pose it and play with it. That's when I had that big WWF ring in the middle, and I'd put one figure on one side, the other on the other, and they would wrestle for the championship belt. And what I would do is, as people would come in, I'd give them a piece of paper, or we'd ask them, and I'd say, well, who should win? We got Jesse Ventura or Michael Jackson? Jesse Ventura, Michael Jackson. You know, and then we'd check off. The following week, that's who the champion would be. And then when Jesse Ventura got the belt, and I forget who he got it from, he refused to defend it. And we would get into other toys. My favorite was when I had a friend from the Matthew Broderick Godzilla. Okay. The Matthew, if you remember the Godzilla that we know from the Matthew Broderick movie, not really Godzilla, but whatever. There was a moratorium on the toy. Could not be put out until the movie hit because they didn't want anyone to see what the monster looked like because it was really under wraps. He scored me one. And what I did is I put it on under a box. And I told people, if you want to ruin the surprise, go ahead and take a look. Some did, some didn't. So that was kind of cool. The following week, I had a classic Godzilla versus the poser Godzilla. Loser leave the shop. Guess who won? Oh, yeah. Classic Godzilla. Sometimes we would go crazy. Like we would take a, if you remember, well, you remember him as Sandman. From ECW?
Yeah.
He was Hack when he went to WCW. So we opened up a Hack WCW figure. We had a Peter Griffith. We had a Homer Simpson. And we had a Iron Man. And they were basically having a big beer party. Which, if you know anything about Iron Man, was probably not a good thing for Tony Stark. At least not till Robert Downey Jr. came around. There was one time we had a figure where it was action figure size. And again, we're talking like 6 inch, 9 inch maybe. And it was a young woman with a baby. And they put all the guys around the ring and say, okay, who's the dad? And then after we figured out who the dad was, we gave the figure to my daughter to play with. I will have to talk to young little Mike, though, because I do remember the Scott Hall figure getting into very interesting poses in the back room with the Britney Spears figure we opened. Needless to say, Daniel was like, can I play with that? And whoops, oh, sorry, they fell on the floor. Yeah, go ahead. So there got to be a point where I would open the figure. I mean, I opened the Malbolgia figure, that incredibly huge figure that Todd McFarlane said he lost money on. So that was pretty much it. Nowadays, I look at what I'm sitting around me. Okay, there on the bottom row is a complete run of Rising Star figures, J. Michael Straczynski's figures from his comic series from Image. Behind me on the shelf, I've got a They Live figure from NADA. That's those guys in the back of Target that have all the box collector sets, and they're in Walmarts too. $30 for these things now. Crazy. I got Bobby Heenan in the Weasel suit. I've got the Mandalorian, A Man Called Nova. There's a White Moon Knight. I've got DC Icon Supergirl. Somebody Corey's probably never heard of. Orange Cassidy from AEW figure. So I still pick up.
No idea.
There's Crypto. I picked him up at Issues Needed. There's the War Doctor. I've got a commemorative series, Rodimus Prime. So I do pick him up. I'm still, I'm surrounded by these toys. I've got the Rocket Raccoon Hulk Hot Wheel. If you remember that from, what was that? That was one of the exclusives where, if you remember in Endgame, Hulk's riding in the back of the Jeep as they enter New Asgard, and it's like dragging its ass.
Yeah.
Over there, I've got a Q figure. Here's some heavy metal figures. Tarna. You remember the classic figure there? There's some Mandula figures. So, again, I still pick up figures. I'm not collecting them in the sense that I need the entire run, which would drive me crazy because they're just hard to find. You can't get runs. There's Minnesota Toy Posse, thank God. They go on and they like, hey, I found this. Does anybody need it? I'll buy it for you. I'll catch up. They do their shows. God, I guess I do still got a lot of toys. I guess my wife is right. No, here's a – okay, I picked up a white Shaft Youngblood figure. This is one of those exclusive ones. Here's a Joe Michael Linsner Dawn figure. Stan Lee figure. Oh, my one pop figure. Spam Can. So, again, I don't buy as many as I used to. I look, but – I just don't have the room for them. If I can find them cheap, like I do the dollar books, I'll buy them. And my goal with half these figures that you heard of, I want to open them. What I really want is there's a Peacemaker figure. I finally got one with the helmet on, not with the helmet off. And that one I bought actually loose. So a lot of times I'll buy the loose figures. Sometimes when I go to especially the Toy Posse shows, I'll see the Build-A-Figures, but you figure that's six figures. So they're probably spending $100 to put them together. And I've seen the Anti-Monitor. I've seen King Shark and just fun things. Or sometimes I'll buy goofy stuff like this. I've got, if you remember when I did my Hawaiian trip, I got the mini building blocks, Pearl Harbor set, which includes the USS Arizona, the Bullfin, the Missouri, and the Aviation Museum. They're basically like Lego sets. The one things I still do buy to finish up in this kind of round circle, the Hot Wheel figures. Oh, I still like a good diecast. Most of the time I buy them, I want to open them. And I will, unless they suddenly go crazy. But I'm trying to get this load of figures here that I just bought without knocking my computer over. Okay, here we go. We got the police car from Fargo. Go Bears. The green light. Let's see. I've got the Batman Collected Series. Here's another version of the 1966. I've got the one from The Batman, the movie now playing, which is more of a muscle car. I picked up a Scooby-Doo Mystery Machine from Cartoon Ways. Disney's Pixar Onward. This has just got Pegasus on the side. I just thought it looked cool. Here's a Back to the Future 3 when he's got the weird wheels on it and the Mr. Gulper garbage thing on the back. A Blues Brother, the classic car. I also have a version where they've got the big speaker on the top. And, of course, my goal is to get 85 of the police vehicles, the Chicago police vehicles, because I want to recreate that pileup at the end of the movie, if you remember that. And, of course, Corey and I have talked about our love for it, the Thanos copter. No, not the original one that we both got from San Diego Comic Con. But if you're lucky enough to go to Target, they have them on a blister pack, and you can open it up, and it's just a Bell helicopter. It says Thanos on the side.
Yep.
I gotta open mine too. And I collect fire trucks. The non property one I got, there was a one called the Coupe Clip. And it's basically just a solid piece of metal in the form of a Hot Wheel. People, what's the point? I said, well, look at the little hole in back. It's for your keychain. Just something goofy. So, and I've got loose ones. I mean, I got to admit, I admitted to myself long ago, I'm a shopaholic. And if I can buy a Hot Wheel car for 99 cents, the same price I bought it for way back in the 70s, that's enough for me. And I will open them and play with them.
Well, you know who else you should be shopping at, Joe?
Well, let me find my list. Who do you think we should be shopping at?
These guys, our sponsors.
Oh, and I telegraphed it for you.
Normally in this space, we have advertising. But for the rest of the year, in the spirit of giving, instead, we're giving our advertising time over to fundraisers to help people who are in need. And the best place to help comic book creators who are in need is the HeroInitiative.org. The Hero Initiative raises money and helps creators with medical issues, finding work, fighting homelessness. These are comic creators who may be switching careers, may have fallen on hard times, or they may have worked in the business for a long time. And as you know, comic book companies, everything there is, you're paid by the page. It's not a salary. It's not benefited. It's not with a retirement. So this is how we can help the creators who've made our lives better by their work. Head on over to the HeroInitiative.org in order to donate or buy items. Artist Tom Lyle, who drew tons of comics over the years, including a run on Spider-Man during the Spider-Clone saga, helped create the Tim Drake Robin, passed away recently, leaving his spouse with medical bills. You can donate by going to GoFundMe.com and looking up Tom-Lyle to donate to help pay off those medical bills from his hospital stay. If you are a wrestling fan, you know who ODB is. ODB is a Minnesota gal who got out of wrestling and got into the food truck business. One morning she woke up and her food truck had burned to the ground. She is running a fundraiser at Indiegogo. So go to Indiegogo.com, put in help ODB get cooking again, and you can purchase her wonderful sauces, autograph pictures. All funds go toward helping her buy a new food truck so she can start her business again. These are people who need your help. If you know someone who needs help or has a fundraiser, please let us know by sending an email to solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. And after the first of the year, when we get back to regular ads, you can buy an ad too. Again, it's solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks. And I do all sorts of other podcasts and other ventures outside of this, like this. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs, but you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast, but on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show.
Oh, where I can go on mute and try to clear my throat?
No. Not where you tell us every story you know about Kirstanen.
Ooh.
The bounty hunter Wookiee. No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
You know what's funny? I don't even have my eBays up and ready to go.
How dare you, sir?
I know. And you know what I've been doing all this week? And you'll find out why when we get to freaking. I've been putting up tons of stuff on eBay. And I'm telling you, it must be something going on because we hit that summer period. Because I've gone from lots of sales every day to almost nothing. So if you're out there, my dear listeners, and you want to make a quick look at something, it's easy to do because when you get to my eBay page, which is, crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, you click on where it goes, newly listed, and you can see all the new stuff I listed. Like within, right before the Hissier podcast, I listed three different Transformers RI variant covers, RI, the retailer incentives, one for Optimus Prime 1, Transformers Infiltration 3, foil logo, Transformers 25. I listed a Green Lantern 47 that had the Harley Quinn black little black book variant cover, sketched by someone probably Corey's never heard of, Darwin Cook.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he drew comics, didn't he?
Yeah. Very well, I might add. I also had I found another signed copy of a book called Artesia Afield, number one. That was the limited variant cover that was signed by the creator, Mark, I believe it's Smiley. He only did 1,000 of them, and I know I had up to 5 of them, and they did sell eventually. But like I said, things are going, they're selling. I'm getting people making offers on stuff. Some of the things that disappeared. I had speaking of toys, this one is kind of neat because this actually came from Hot Comics. It was a Samurai Spirits Showdown number 4 Shiki action figure from Sideshow way back from 2001 in a very, very nice package. Just one of those pieces that I got put aside. And as I'm digging through boxes of stuff, it's like, oh my gosh, I still got this. And somebody made an offer and I took it. A couple Vampirella variant covers, number 5. Gilliam March Virgin variant cover, and a Final Order cutoff black and white variant. I sold I think I mentioned this, I picked up a really beat up copy of Dell 4 Color 869 Walt Disney's Old Yeller, dated back in 1957. They reprinted it later under the Gold Key logo, I believe, in the Walt Disney Showcase, but this was the original one. Looked like it just got wet. But it's perfectly readable. A couple of My Little Pony variants. Twilight Zone number 88, Golden Key, the one I did a review on a while back. It was fun reading. I just got rid of it. Aliens 1 through 6 and Aliens Aftermath, the new Marvel series, or the newer. It started last year. Sold to a gentleman, I believe, in the Netherlands. My copy of Department of Truth number 1, because I'm buying it in the graphic novel format. And I think I mentioned this one. This was one I was kind of like, but I got a copy of Fantico Chronicle series number 4, The History of the Avengers. Back then, when this came out in 82, they kind of just did a synopsis and kind of they next appeared in this issue. The type of continuity stuff I absolutely love and was easier to follow back then because they weren't just popping out miniseries to pop out miniseries, whether they fit in continuity or not. Don't worry, though. I've got over 1,000 items on eBay. I'll put more on. I put a bunch of hardcovers on. You know what to do. Just go check out what's on my shop. And if you want to make a deal for it, again, I know a lot of you have, and I thank you and I love you for doing it. And especially if you're a listener, brand new listener to this here podcast, because I usually send you a flyer for the show. So I hope you find us interesting enough. But I'm in a desperate mode here. I'm not even going to Claremont Comics tomorrow to buy $1 books. And I'll tell you why when we get to the next portion of the show. In the meantime, K-R-A-Y-Z, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show.
Oh, we do a Kleenex countdown?
No, not where I read what's on my Zen calendar for the day. By the way, Today, let me take a look and see what it is for today. Today, he taught me all that I don't know.
Hey, now.
No, it's Freaking a Geeky Joe. What are you freaking on?
Well, one of the reasons why I was home a lot this week, COVID has decided to revisit the Ryder household.
Ouch.
We're all better now. Like I said, I've still got a cough. I've had the cough for a while, so I don't believe it's COVID related. Before I go to work tomorrow, though, I will take another test just in case. My work week was aborted. As you know, last week I was bitterly, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, bitterly complaining about having to go back to work after a glorious, 3 weeks off from recovering from my surgery. So, but I just got to get back in the swing of things. That's really it. This weekend, as this podcast drops, is July 4th, which is traditionally not a big flying holiday. But whatever, I get holiday pay for it, so I can't complain. So those things were kind of freaking me out. How about you, Corey? What's freaking you out?
Last night on AEW Dynamite was Blood and Guts, which is basically their version of the old WCW War Games. It's two rings. They put a steel cage with a they put a Hell in a Cell over it, and everybody fights till somebody submits. And it's called Blood and Guts, so of course there's going to be blood. But as I watched
and
the
guts.
As I watched the match, two things really jumped out at me. First was, yes, people bled. It didn't add anything to the match. I was watching it, and it was this really cool brawl, but there's so much going on that when somebody would start bleeding, it's, we're over here, and then we're over here, and then we got to do it. So they were cutting themselves to bleed, and it didn't change the match. The match was the same without it, and I'm really tired of, we got to have blood in the match because we got to have blood in the match. And the other thing was that they brought in stuff from death matches. And I've talked in the past about why I hate death matches. They had a bag of broken glass that they slammed people on, and somebody picked a guy up and was raking broken glass across his head. And they had those wooden skewers that you get at a restaurant, jamming those into somebody's head. I hate that. I hate that more than anything. And just the match itself, nothing was added to it by the blood. the brawling was enough. And I honestly think if they would have just brawled all over the place and using chairs and tables and kendo sticks and garbage cans and, you know, the usual implements of destruction, the implements of plunder, violence for violence sake, it would have worked without the blood. It really would have worked without the blood. They also did some really dangerous stuff. And all I could think is, yeah, the problem with the fact that you're doing all this is you do it again in 2 weeks. So 2 weeks from now, it's not going to matter. There's a way to make it matter. There's a way to make it resonate, but it just doesn't. I still like my AEW, but I wish they would just cut back on the blood and the gore and all that, because when they just present wrestling and they just present stories, this guy hates this guy, and here are the things they're going to do to attack each other. It works really well because it's not fully scripted. It's give the people a microphone and let them talk. I honestly, one of my jokes I always use is, I don't think Eddie Kingston knows that wrestling is fake, because everything he does just seems real. He's very old school about it. Whenever he's on my screen, I know shit's about to get real. Comic-wise, I don't have a lot of complaints other than DCB Service sent my final package. I get two packages a month. So usually, if it's a week with five Wednesdays, you get it the second Wednesday and the fifth Wednesday. Well, this month they did it the second Wednesday and the fourth Wednesday, which means they sent my pack and, previews came out. When are you going to get it? At about 2 weeks. I won't get my previews till you do, Joe. And I know how frustrating that is.
Oh, yeah. In fact, you said that. I'm looking at mine now just to see if my shipment. I have nothing prepared.
Yeah. So, and the problem is that when I get it, that means I'm only going to have about a week or so turnaround before they say, hey, your order's due, buddy.
Not to mention, we want to do our preview show with enough time so you conceivably could go to your friendly neighborhood comic store and say, hey, you know what? These idiots, again, they're mentioning a book that they like. Could you put that on my list?
These or are you just sniggering at these us? These losers, these morons.
Oh, they're crazy, you know.
Joe, what are you geeking on?
Actually, I take that back. My box day should be here Saturday. So I call in sick tomorrow to go to Clear's, and then never mind. The weather is actually nice up here. It's in the 90s, but it's not humid. So we're not dying. Minnesotans melt when we get over 80. A lot of people don't realize that. I actually got an update on my computer I like. I've been having the damnedest time whenever I call up a photograph to edit, because what happens is it never closes. It's just saving, saving, saving. Or sometimes it'll save and not actually save my edits. In other words, say I'm editing down because I just want, you know, this part of the photograph. Well, I saved it. Well, you didn't save what I edited. Or I might have to save it as another picture, whatever. It was all sorts of shenanigans, but something upgraded and now everything seems to be normal. Occasionally, I'll edit like a photo and it won't accept that I did an edit. So I flip it. So it's like backwards, save it, then I open it again and flip it back, whatever. I can live with that. So it was an update that I appreciated. I've been trying to avoid Windows 11, but, you know, it's like, what else am I, whatever. Watching, I'm still digging Star Trek Discovery. I'm still digging Orville. That's kind of my highlight of Thursday is I get up, I talk to my old buddy Turbo, and then I watch these two shows, and then I end the day doing the podcast with my other buddy. What's his name? It doesn't share pie. It'll come to me. Don't worry about it. We did start, my wife and I, a new show. And I say new because it's new to us. Probably not to most of you because it's on its third season. Barry from HBO Max. This stars Bill Hader, Stephen Root, Henry Winkler. Barry, Bill's character, essentially a very good sniper who's kind of fallen into hitman for hire. And then when they go to L.A., he discovers, I want to be an actor. And shenanigans ensue. Only 30 minutes. So my wife and I have taken to watching it and then maybe watching a MASH, because MASH is kind of our comfort program just to calm down in order to, you know, go to bed. We're enjoying the heck out of it. So if, and again, it's on its third season. So if you're digging it, I'm late to the party. I'm joining you. If you're not, you might want to give it a shot, because we found it really funny. Tomorrow, of course, the final episode. I don't know if it's two episodes or just one extended of Stranger Things 4. So by the time this airs, I'll have watched it, maybe talked about it. I don't know if you're in on this at all, Corey. I've enjoyed it. It's pretty fun. The final two things. You know, we often sometimes talk about, do you have any grails that you are looking for? I don't really have any holy grails that I'm after. Yeah, I'd love to get another first appearance of Supergirl, way out of my price range. I'm never going to afford it. But there was a book that came out done by David Gerrold, the writer supreme, artist Troy Boyle, who I have befriended on Facebook. And one of these names, I'll get down there and drink with him. And inked by Austin. No, not Terry, Jeff. And they came out with a 500 edition limited copy of Amazing Stories, A Doctor for the Enterprise, where you had the David Tennant Doctor going back to the original Star Trek Enterprise. And you know, if David Gerrold's writing it, you know he knows what he's doing. Troy is a good artist, but he's also proof that just because you have talent doesn't mean you're going to succeed. Because he's tried, you know, again, he's in his 50s. He didn't get the breaks necessary in order to break into comics and be able to have a living at it, which is a shame. And there's probably more people like that. Well, it's a lot like with your story, Corey. You know, you're all ready to pen these comics and then everything fell apart. What if it didn't fall apart? Things might have changed. You never know. Anyways. Amazing Stories Police Box sold out. Could not find it anywhere. David didn't have them. Troy didn't have them. Somebody mentioned you can still find them. Store.amazingstories.com still has them. They're pricey. They run about $30, but they're limited edition. And this is what got me. They're signed both by David and Troy. And I have things signed by David. I've never met Troy, so never had him sign anything. I actually have some of his first works, ironically, from Caliber Comics. So I'm so happy to have this. This is just like one of those mini things. I always would Google it here, there, everywhere. But I was able to find a copy, thanks, through Facebook. And now if you're interested, you too can go get one. Let me just double check. That's pretty much everything I'm geeking on. Corey, how about yourself? What are you geeking on?
Oh, let's see. I really enjoyed digging through those dollar boxes. That was a lot of fun, and it was something I haven't been able to do for a while. Yeah, you know, when we go to one of the shops, the back issues, I don't really dig through the back issues. I don't like it when the dollar books are all out of order. I'm getting more and more like Butch, which is why when we go to, say, the College Comic Book Knowledge, I dig through their packs. Why? The packs are in order. And I could go, oh, yeah, I want to read that. I want to read that. I want to read that. And this, the sale where the stuff was in order, it was, oh, yeah, cool, cool, cool. And it's just nice that now I got a long box of cheap comics in my car. And let's say, you know, it's 4th of July weekend. I'm done with my working Saturday night at 9 o'clock. I set it up so that I have Sunday off and Monday off. The weather's nice. I might just go to a park somewhere and read comics, or I might sit on the deck and read comics, because I have 2 days where I don't have to do anything. Knowing me, it's going to rain the whole time, but still. I am still reading my Conan omnibuses, and damn, we did not know how good we had it. I always say that, but that John Buscema art, it's even when I look at his other art during the same time period, boy, his Fantastic Four was good. His other superhero stuff was good. His Conan, you could tell he cared because it doesn't rely as much on stock poses. He really labors over his poses, making his especially the village people, you know, just the background people in the villages, they all look completely different. They all have personality in their faces. And Roy Thomas was just going to authors and saying, hey, can I take your book that's out of print, turn it into a Conan story? I can? Okay, cool. And I'm reading in the letters pages where he says, I'm writing 22 Conan stories a year. And the ones I write for Savage Sword are between 30 and 50 pages. It's no wonder he got burned out on Conan after a while. But it's just so good. I watched the Uncanny Omar on, what is it? Prime Mint or Pristine Mint, when he announces, he's the guy that Marvel goes to announce their omnibuses on YouTube. And he's already giving us what the omnibuses are going to be into 2023. They announced one last week that I kind of just, yeah, I don't go over a whole lot of omnibuses anymore. It's like, okay, that'll be cool. He had one where I just went, I can't wait for that one. The original Nova. Nova was a superhero in the 70s. You know, he's still around today, but in the 70s, it was kind of this. It was a superhero. It started while I was reading. And I liked it because all the other superheroes in the Marvel Universe, you know, Reed Richards was super smart. Tony Stark was really smart. Peter Parker was really smart. There weren't any superheroes who were just kind of average guys. But Nova, Rich Rider, was just kind of an average guy. He just kind of lucked into being a superhero. And I always thought that that made him special. And it made him interesting. And I really enjoyed it until, of course, Carmine Infantino took over the art. And Marv Wolfman completely lost his way on the book. But it is the entire 25 issues of Nova plus the wrap-up from the Fantastic Four. Basically, it's all the Nova stories up until New Warriors. So that's an omnibus that I'm really excited about. TV-wise, I have not had time to watch TV other than wrestling because Sunday night was the Forbidden Door. New Japan Pro Wrestling and All Elite Pro Wrestling had a combined card, and I'm going to get this out of the way. I know that there are people who are like, they didn't build up the New Japan people, so people in the U.S. didn't know who they were, and this was just a show for the diehards and blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm one of the diehards, so it was a show for me. And it was just a good, old-fashioned, fun wrestling show. And it was, you get to see stars of one company against the stars of another company. And it reminds me of those Marvel DC team ups where the stories didn't have to be great because you're getting to see Spider-Man with Batman. That's so cool. You're getting to see Hulk with Superman. That's so cool. There's just something about team ups. There's always something about team ups that I as a fan, I just love team ups. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about toys and funny books for an hour and a half. And since Joe's muted because he's
along. I've got things to prepare because I'm going to do a new segment that we're going to put drop at the end of every show.
Oh, no.
Oh,
great.
Well, it depends. Our friends from Granite City Comics up in St. Cloud are going to have Alec Garcia on July 21st from 3 to 6 p.m. So if you want to get yourself up there and have him fill out some books from Artist Elite, here's your chance to do it.
Oh, Minnesota. I thought you were going to add more dad jokes.
Oh, no. This is, we always talk about, if you got an event, reach out and let us know. And I have a couple of people that did that. For example, the Minnesota Toy Posse is doing an independence sale. Not quite on July 4th, but it'll be Sunday, July 24th at the Eagles. I think it's a VFW. 2507 East 25th Street, Minneapolis. One I always talk about every time I hit. New vintage toys, some comics. They've been game artists, printed prints and crafts. Vendors both inside and out. And it's always worth visiting. And then, of course, September 17th, Minnesota Comic Exchange Comic Show at Valley Creek Mall in Woodbury will be happening. So we got three events coming up that we know of. Again, you got a sale or something you want us to promote, just drop us a line and we'll take care of it. That's all.
Oh, good.
Well, there's more, but they haven't told us.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Sad news.
Kids, no.
Yeah, a kid's Hot Wheel car drove over and killed Barbie. Toys will be toys.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
Well, you know what you call a ginger hot. You know what you call a ginger race car driver? Hot Wheels.
Am I going to have to hit your music for you?
Well, you might, because otherwise I'll say, what's the difference between a Hot Wheels car and a shy sailor? One's a toy car, the other is a koi tar.
Ooh, maybe I could end the show with sea shanties.
Uh-oh. All right, talk me into it. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!